If you want to fine-tune your prompting skills, make sure to attend O'Reilly's Prompt to Product Showdown virtual event, led by Lucas Suarez, on August 15 from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific Daylight Time. You'll see how five experts used carefully crafted prompts to build minimum viable products with generative AI. All right, so welcome back to Generative AI in the Real World. I'm your host, Ben Lorca, here today with Rikin Gandhi. He is the CEO of Digital Green. So Rikin, welcome to the podcast.
Great to meet, Ben. Thank you for having me.
So Digital Green, our audience probably isn't that familiar with how farmers might use AI. So maybe give us a quick overview of what your application does and who is it for.
Digital Green works to improve the efficiency in which farmers are trained to increase their productivity and their resilience against climate shocks. For the last 15 years, we've been using videos by and for farmers so they can share improved agricultural practices more efficiently with one another. And about 2 years ago, we embarked on leveraging generative AI in an application that we call Farmer.chat to put these local language videos by and for farmers together with other data sources like weather and market info so that farmers in local languages and with images can triage issues that they face on their farms.
So the farmers then are relying on mobile.
They are. They're using a mobile application as well as WhatsApp and Telegram-based interfaces that are very popular across the geographies that we work with, primarily in the global south in places like India, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria.
So can you just walk us through, Rikin, in some detail? So what are your data sources, first of all?
So the primary one that we've been leveraging has been our historical library of more than 10,000 videos in about 40 different languages that have been produced not by us, but by this community of farmers and organizations that are supporting farmers. And then along with that, there are these additional data sources of weather, market information that are also being integrated. Most recently, we've also been integrating some decision support tools with our, which are more like linear regression based mathematical models to provide more site specific information to farmers on things like fertilizer and irrigation management, or for cattle dairy farmers, optimized feed ration advisories to boost milk yields while reducing emissions.
So there's a combination of historical data, which is your library of videos and instructional material, and some real-time information that might be weather or market-related. So I'm assuming then you must have some sort of back-end cloud infrastructure to kind of do all of the heavy lifting and then deliver it to the mobile device.
That's correct. So there is, of course, like the front-end interface that these farmers are using, which again, for those who have smartphones, they're using this mobile application, WhatsApp or Telegram. We also have an interface for those who don't have smartphones, who might just have feature phones, that they're able to leverage an interactive voice response system just by calling into a number and being able to interact with a bot. Then there is like the layer around taking their input of their query, depending on what format it might be coming in, voice, text, image, or a combination thereof, and then being able to do basically a speech to text on that input, along with, in some cases, a need for translation to be able to put that into a language like English that can then be better able to query a vectorized database representation of our knowledge base of these videos and other dynamic data sets, as I mentioned, which themselves also go through a processing pipeline that is similar of a speech to text and translation so that it can then become accessible for these communities.
So generative AI opened up some level of personalization and recommendation and interaction. So at what point, Rickon, did you and your team, and many of our listeners probably are in this boat as well. So at what point, as you were looking at generative AI, did you realize, huh, this is something good enough for us to use? Were you folks already kind of slowly doing AI, but then generative AI just kind of exploded your usage?
Yeah, so it's basically like a bit of a gradual transition. So I explained like the V1 of our approach, which was using these offline videos being produced and showing them offline, using these barrier projectors to these groups of farmers, recording data and feedback, making that whole process kind of work. But what happened was COVID and the pandemic kind of period basically didn't allow us to bring these groups of farmers together to watch these in-person video screenings. And at the silver lining of that was that an increased number of these farmers came online during exactly that same period. And so before we went to this generative AI version of farmer.chat, we had a deterministic bot that we had over platforms like WhatsApp created so that people could basically traverse a tree of to identify what piece of information that they were looking for to select. Maybe I'm in a state of Andhra Pradesh in India. I'm interested in this crop of chili. I have a pest issue. And then I want to be able to identify that it's whitefly. And then how do I remedy that? So we already saw that folks were beginning to use some of these like deterministic bots because of the challenges of physical distancing requirements and the like. But on the other hand, these deterministic bots were super challenging to both create on our side to map out these complex decision trees. And then also on the usability side, quite challenging for these farmers to also traverse even like the flow that I just explained, because that could be one flow of going from state to crop and then a pest issue that I want to find a solution for. But I might also just want to more directly, I say that I don't even know what pests I have, and I want to be able to diagnose what it is that I'm looking at. And so basically with the release of GPT-3, we began to test it out and saw that there was a real opportunity to move away from that complexity and cost from both the user side and for us to execute. And we began this journey of seeing that actually there's a way more intuitive way in which all of these knowledge bases can be represented, harnessing like the existing sort of video library that we already had, and then make it way more intuitive for these farmers who prefer local language, voice, and image-based ways to navigate and traverse information, and not so much complex ontological kind of like mappings.
One of the things that is intriguing about your situation is it seems like you're inherently multimodal, right? So you have video, you mentioned speech to text, you have a voice interface. So as far as multimodality, does that pose a special kind of challenge?
Yeah, but also like a new opportunity. So when we first began by putting in like the videos into the knowledge base, we did the most basic thing around extracting the audio tracks and then doing speech to text on them and translation. Now we're also leveraging some of these tools like GPT Vision so that also descriptive metadata about the actions that are taking place in a video, like how a person might be applying water by not just like dumping like a canister of water, but perhaps sprinkling it on their field, how that can also become part of the database on the content side. And then similarly on the query side, when we began, we were just working with text-based queries. And then we added on like sort of voice support, which was like super critical, especially since we work in these languages with non-Latin characters that are sometimes quite difficult for folks to input on like a mobile phone keyboard. But instead now they can just use, you know, natural language voice based queries. And then people also do prefer to be able to just take a photograph of a crop or of an animal that might have some kind of disease or other issue that they want to be able to diagnose. Some of the out-of-the-box models like GPT Vision work pretty well generally, but then we're also trying to build some of this tooling specifically for the agricultural domain to more quickly resolve what the person is looking at and what the issue is that they want to be able to solve. And that's where like the combination of photo as well as voice kind of input together can be quite powerful.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the O'Reilly Podcast, Generative AI in the Real World. If you want to listen to the full version, please log in to the platform at O'Reilly.com.